The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives, you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid, wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast. We're recording this on Monday during the solar eclipse, so it is very fitting that I am joined by the guy who does not believe in eclipses. That is Josh Edwards, and of course, the guy who does not even need to wear any special glasses when he stares at the sun during an eclipse, and that is Emery Hunt. How are you two doing today?
Doing well, man. You're going to have the bird, charging on the telephone wire conspiracy theorists on me after that. But happy to talk about some guys that don't get enough attention throughout the draft process.
Totally excited about it, man. And Josh hit the nail dead on the head because the draft is bigger than eight people, folks, and we're here to talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, Emery, you're going to be banned from the podcast if there's any other natural disasters. Because as we mentioned pre-pod, there was an earthquake the last time you were on. We have an eclipse this time. I don't even want to be on when you're on next because I'm worried about what might happen. As you guys mentioned, though, look, the draft is over 2 weeks away. It feels like we have spent the past 3 months talking about everyone at the top of the draft. We've had every conversation possible about Caleb Williams. So now we are going to flip around and look at some possible sleepers, some guys that might fall to the bottom of the draft, or guys that you haven't heard of that could move up to the top of the draft. So that is what we're going to do today. Look at some sleeper prospects, look at some small school prospects, and we are going to start with sleepers. Look, there's nobody better to talk to than you two, especially Emery. Emery, you dig down to the bottom of the draft. I remember last year you mentioned a school I didn't even know existed. That's what I knew. That Emery was going deep with his sleeper. So let's just start there. Who is your top sleeper that could maybe end up being a guy who makes a major impact in the NFL?
Well, it's fascinating because you watch these guys throughout the process. So I start the process in December when I head to the FCS Bowl, which is a smaller all-star game, first all-star game out in the States in Daytona Beach, first week of December. And this guy was there, and then he ended up getting a call up to the Tropical Bowl, which is another mid-level all-star game in January, and that's Levy Drake Rodriguez of Texas A&M Commerce. And backing up a little bit, when you look at him and you look at that program, last year I had a high grade on an edge rusher in Celestine Haba of Texas A&M Commerce, who ended up going, didn't get drafted, but ended up going to the Winnipeg Blue Bombers as a rookie out of the United States and starting. That's unheard of. And was leading the league in sacks for the first 6 weeks before he got injured. So that's telling you about the program and how they rotate this defensive line. But Levy Drake Rodriguez is someone that really was looking like he shouldn't be at the FCS Bowl. But then we get to call up to the Tropical Bowl. Now you're playing against FBS offensive linemen, and he's still doing the same things he did back in December. I'm talking about quickness off the ball, works his hands rather well, uses his natural leverage, does all those things you want to see an interior defensive lineman to do. And he was doing it consistently over the course of the practices and also did a good job in the game. So this is someone that has been generating a lot of buzz. all throughout the offseason. Now, we're talking about day three here, so we're talking about seventh round maybe. But if not, definitely is going to be a high-priority free agent because of what we've seen from Texas A&M Commerce over the last two draft cycles along the defensive line.
Yeah, and for people who are not familiar with Texas A&M Commerce, look, they're in the Southland Conference, so get your Southland Conference schedule. And I think, Emery, what you just mentioned is important is that you have these guys who maybe aren't playing the best competition during the regular season, but you really do get a good idea of how good they are once they get to these postseason all-star games, and you can really see if they can match up with these guys. I do love that you mentioned the same school last year as you did this year, and that they're turning it, they're mining out defensive linemen. It's kind of crazy. And here's a quick fact about Texas A&M Commerce. The first player ever drafted out of that school, and I believe first and only, Antonio Wilson to the Minnesota Vikings in the year of our Lord 2000. So it happened 24 years ago. We could see it happen again here 24 years later. All right, Josh, give it to me. Who is your number one sleeper prospect in the draft?
Yeah, that's tough to top. I've actually got two, one of which I put on the sheet. The other one that I did not put on the sheet because it's the only group of five player that we will talk about today. Nathan Thomas, the offensive tackle out of Louisiana. I had to do this. Emery's a big Louisiana guy. I feel like I've been carrying the flag to this point, so I'm going to go ahead and steal this one again. When you look at what he has done at the collegiate level, he's played right tackle. You could possibly see him move inside at the next level. Similar to what we saw from another raging Cajun offensive lineman, Robert Hunt, who was a right tackle for the raging Cajuns as well, made the transition inside and signed a very lucrative contract this offseason with the Carolina Panthers. The other player that I have prepared is Jalix Hunt, the edge rusher out of Houston Christian. Still kind of an unpolished pass rusher. He was a safety at Cornell for 3 years, made the transition to rushing off the edge. A guy that's got a lot of untapped potential, and I think you could see that come out at the next level. This is a guy that 6'4", 252, ran a 4.64 in the 40-yard dash, as well as a 1.6 10-yard split. So you see that explosive ability a little bit, and that's going to excite coaches at the next level. He lettered in basketball, track and field. Father played at Ole Miss, so he's got a little bit of that pedigree that suggests he could make the transition to the next level. And then 37.5-inch vertical jump, 10'8" broad jump, just a really well-rounded athlete that I think a lot of teams are going to be excited by in this draft.
And let me ask you this, and I'll go back to Emery real quick. Was your guy at the combine?
Yeah, my guy was at the combine, so that's probably going to prevent him from being a true sleeper in this draft class. But when we're talking about guys that could make a big impact at the next level, your pickings are a little bit slim, so I kind of cherry-picked a little bit on this one. But nonetheless, a guy that has taken his opportunity to small school and really elevated his platform.
And Emery, was Drake Rodriguez at the combine?
No, he wasn't. And surprisingly, he wasn't, because this is someone that probably should have been there from an athleticism standpoint. Don't get me started on the NFL combine and its process of getting guys there that don't want to participate.
All right. That makes him a true sleeper then, if you get taken without getting a combine invite. And I gave a fun fact about Emery's guy, at least his college. Josh, let me ask you this. You have obviously your guy went to Houston Christian, which if everyone is thinking, scratching their head, wondering what that school is, it used to be called Houston Baptist. Josh, do you know the first player ever to be drafted who started at Houston Baptist or Houston Christian as it is known now?
Yeah, that would be the quarterback.
Oh,
you have to help me out. The quarterback that's with the Patriots now. I can't think of his name.
Ever, you know it?
It's Bailey Zappe.
Bailey Zappe. Yeah, before he transferred to Western Kentucky. Yep.
I could see Emery's eyes lit up. I knew he knew right away.
They'll be Houston Methodist by tomorrow. You know, they keep changing denominations.
Get everybody in. Be all-encompassing. We take everyone. Everyone's welcome. All right, there we are. We got Drake Rodriguez, Levy. Drake Rodriguez. We got Jalix Hunt. And, of course, Josh's wild card, Nathan Thomas, for the sleepers. When we come back, we'll talk about a few different prospects. And these prospects are from the Great White North. We'll be back after the break.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending. With real-time notifications, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
All right, welcome back. Now, I teased the Great White North prospects from Canada. Before we get to that, we're actually going to do some comparisons, which is good to do here because I think a lot of the times people will be listening. They haven't heard of maybe some of the small school prospects or the sleeper prospects that we're mentioning. So we decided, hey, let's compare it to a guy who's currently in the NFL right now. And that gives you a better idea of what this guy's skill set is and what he might be able to do at the next level. So Emery, we're going to start with you on this. Looks like, give me what you got.
Well, and comparisons are key because it helps people kind of figure out what kind of player the guy is, right? And everyone wants to compare everyone to greats, and because that's easy to identify. But when you compare them to people that guys see every day, it makes a little bit more reasonable, realistic, and sense. So if you like Brandon Strange, the tight end out of Penn State that's with Jacksonville, you'll like Owen Glasgow out of Long Island. Now, here's the thing. He also was at Penn State before he transferred to LIU. So there's some lineage there. But this dude is super athletic and is always around the football and is always able to do things differently with the football. He started the game against Stonehill at quarterback. So he's played quarterback in terms of like quarterback power and zone read. But technically, he started the game as a quarterback against Stonehill, had a 12-yard QB power. Inside the red zone, he's been a monster there, both as a receiver and also as a Wildcat quarterback. So you expand your playbook. If I'm, you know, the NFL, I don't let Andy Reid get his hands on him. I don't let Sean Payton get his hands on him because he's going to be a versatile weapon for that offense. He can play H-back. He can play tight end. He can win above the rim. Had a great college gridiron showcase where he would just, you know, baking these defensive backs and linebackers in one-on-ones. And inside the red zone has 9 rushing touchdowns. So this is someone, if you like the athleticism and the movement skills of Brandon Strange, you'll love the kid coming out of LIU.
I love you telling NFL teams not to let Sean Payton get his hands on him because there's nothing we know that Sean Payton loves more than a versatile tight end. Of course, Taysom Hill down in New Orleans. I'm sure Payton's on the phone with someone trying to make a trade for him right now. Yeah, it would be great to see someone from Long Island. Again, this is just Emery is great at finding these obscure schools who could end up producing solid NFL players. Of course, Brandon Strange, second-round pick with Jacksonville last season in 2023. All right, Josh, let's get to your first comparison.
Yeah, and first of all, we're starting to notice a little bit of a trend with former Penn State tight ends going on to different institutions and then carving their own path to the NFL. We saw Zach Kuntz out of Old Dominion. Was it last year or 2 years ago? Tested off the charts, was one of the best athletic testers at the tight end position. So obviously Penn State's churning out athletes at not just the safety and edge rusher positions that we commonly talk about with them, but also tight end. Mine is Cole Burgess, a wide receiver out of SUNY Cortland. And he, to me, he's like a discount Jaxon Smith-Njigba, somebody that's very savvy route runner, just knows how to get in and out of his releases, great feel for the sideline, somebody that has really great awareness for spatial, you know, awareness in coverage, in zone coverage. So he knows how to attack zone defenses. I think he's going to be able to carve out a role at the next level. And he tested really well this offseason as well. He showed up at Buffalo's pro day. He showed up at Syracuse's pro day. So this is a guy that has set out to make a name for himself. But 5'11", 196 pounds, 4.46 in the 40-yard dash, 1.43 10-yard split. So you see that top-end speed. You see the acceleration a little bit. 41.5-inch vertical jump and an 11-foot-5-inch broad jump. So would have been one of the better testers at the wide receiver position had he been invited to the NFL Combine. But nonetheless, I think a name that fans really need to pay attention to is somebody that could get in there on day three.
And that is SUNY Cortland's D3, aren't they?
Yes, sir.
That would be pretty wild to get a D3 player up in there drafted as a former backup punter at a Division III college. Shout out Hanover. Always love when a D3 guy gets drafted. All right, let's go back to Emery. Who you got for us, Emery?
Well, this is kind of, you know, help is a situation where a player that had success that helps out the next guy, right? It's almost like when Randy Moss burst onto the scene in the NFL, everyone went out and tried to find a 6'5 slim guy that played receiver and compared him to Randy Moss, right? Oh, and Vic went off. Oh, let's go find an athletic quarterback and call him the next Vic and just let him play quarterback, right? Well, last year, Keaton Mitchell's emergence is showing everybody that, hey, size is not a skill, which I've been on the record of saying that, you know, for a decade plus. So now they're looking at, okay, this guy can impact the game with his speed. Man, we can use a guy like Keaton Mitchell. Well, lo and behold, there's a bunch of Keaton Mitchells in this class, but the guy I think that really will benefit from Keaton Mitchell was at the Combine, was at the East-West Shrine Bowl, and I was on a broadcast for 11 of his games over the last three seasons, and that's Jaden Sherton out of Monmouth. Every time I called a game, it was like, this dude's going to go 80. And legitimately, you were leaving a game with at least a 65-plus yard touchdown run because all he needs is a sliver of space, and he's gone. And he was toting the rock there at Monmouth. He was carrying the ball 25 times, right? They barely threw it to him. So that's where he's going to have to grow his game as a pro, as a receiver. But as a runner, give this dude a lane, and he's 88 and out the gate. And it's fascinating because he ran 4.4, which is fast, super fast, but he plays faster. Now, the reason why I brought up Keaton Mitchell is because Sheridan measured in at 5'7", 190. People will say, oh, he's small. He's going to, you know, they're going to hurt him. Like, you can't hit what you can't catch. You can't hurt what you can't touch. And when you got that type of ability, that's the type of guy that you want. He won't have to touch the ball 25 times in the NFL. It won't take that much for him to make the impact. So that's the guy that you want to get if you're looking at a Keaton Mitchell type prototype.
Yeah, and I do think that a good point about bringing up his height is sometimes teams will be afraid of that. And somebody like that will fall in the draft because they're thinking, I don't want to draft a guy who's 5'7 or 5'8 or 5'9, especially a running back who's going to be taking all these hits. But as Emery said, you can dance around and the way you move and you're kind of the lightning type running back. You're not going to take a bunch of huge hits. And we saw Keaton Mitchell obviously have a pretty solid season last year. We've seen small guys thrive. I mean, we saw the Cowboys with Deuce Vaughn. Darren Sproles put together a pretty solid NFL career. He was only 5'6". So yeah, these short guys, and as a short guy, I love seeing other short guys succeed. Josh, you are taller than me. Why don't you give us your next comparison?
So my next comparison is at Albany. Albany has produced some good pass rushers recently. Jared Verse made the transition to Florida State, now is projected to be a first-round pick. But do not sleep on A.J. Simon from Albany either, because he's a very talented pass rusher. I compared him to kind of a Carl Lawson in the way that he's used. You know, he's powerful. He does a good job of setting the edge. He's got good quickness. Didn't test as well as I thought he would. But what you need to see is what you can see when you watch his tape, because he is fantastic. He gets off the ball. He gets upfield, and he's threatening the passer all day. What I like about this part of the process is as we get closer to the draft, you know, some of the people in the NFL, they start reaching out to you. They're saying, hey, you know, maybe this guy is somebody you should take a look at here before we get to draft day. And Simon was one of those players because he gets off the ball so well. And I think he's going to be able to carve out a role for himself at the next level. let's see, he's got good waist bend at the high side of his rush, so he's able to flatten, get after the quarterback. You really see everything that you need to see as far as a player that, you know, can provide some pass rush specific traits while still developing into some other areas of his game. So I think this is a guy that's going to potentially go higher on day three than the first guy I talked about, Cole Burgess, and really find himself a roster spot for the coming season.
Let me ask you this, Josh. Is there any specific team you feel like where you think, man, if he lands there, that's the perfect spot? Maybe it's playing behind someone for a year. Maybe just getting in a good rotation with experienced players. Any team you would like to see him land on?
I think the Jets could be a good fit for him. I mean, you look at what they did with Bryce Huff. Now you've got Hassan Reddick coming over. Reddick is getting a little bit older. Philadelphia made the decision to move on from him, so there's no reason to think that New York may not do the same. I don't know how they feel about Will McDonald IV, so that could be an opportunity for him to fill out some depth there. Detroit had, I think, a similar sawed-off type pass rusher with James Houston, who was able to, you know, make a nice living for himself as a rookie and fill a role for that team. So there's going to be some teams around the league that have an interest for that type of player that's not necessarily going to play every down for you initially, but somebody that can be in there on pass rushing downs and get after the quarterback.
And Emory, I should have asked you that with Jaden Sheridan, since we love the small guys. Any landing spot you would love to see him go to?
Houston. You know, I think Houston would be perfect. You know what I'm saying? When you're thinking about what they had in Devin Singletary, now he's gone. And now you got Mixon. You got Damian Pierce as a kickoff guy. But you need someone that could be that explosive change of pace back that comes in when everyone's tired and he still is, you know, at 98% battery life, right? And he can still explode. And I will just say about the UAlbany rusher Simon, his teammate, Anton Kunjaj, just into the transfer portal, he was just as good as Simon was. He's going to go to FBS program because go and watch the Morgan State game, which I was the color analyst on, in the torrential downpour. Those two dudes wreaked havoc on Morgan State's pocket. And they are UAlbany has a fantastic program up there. Their quarterback just transferred down south as well. You know, Poffenberger. You know, I think he's got, I forgot what school in Florida he's going to, but they were really good last year.
It's crazy when you talk about one smaller school, just keep it. I mean, they have to be able to recruit like crazy. They just keep bringing in these skilled kids and really finding these guys under rocks because, you know, FBS schools aren't finding them. And then these schools turn to proving grounds and send these guys up to FBS schools. All right, Emory, you got one more comparison here.
Yeah. And this was because obviously we've been in TV. We know throughout the production meetings, no one has ever said to one of us, hey, do this for clicks, right? So this may be the first time I'm doing something for clicks, just to draw people to the attention of the player that I'm talking about. And he kind of plays like the guy anyway. But if you like Puka Nacua, that's going to go viral. Then you'll love Kyle Sheets of Slippery Rock. Sheets is about 6'3", right on the nose, 222 pounds, ran high 4.4, low 4.5 at the Temple Pro Day. And this is someone that is a legit vertical threat. He is able to win off the line of scrimmage. He is able to stack the defensive back, which means he doesn't lose position in terms of staying in front of him, thus creating separation while he's tracking the ball, which he does exceptionally well. And he's able to catch the football over his shoulders, equally as impressive as he is through contact. At the College Gridiron Showcase, he had a fantastic week of work against FBS corners. So you saw the Division II jump up from the PSAC translated out there on the field. Now, here's the other thing, too. He had just came off of an injury. This is probably about week 4 or 5. And I just casually, this was after I called the game. So I casually tuned in to a Slippery Rock game because I had heard of Kyle Sheets all throughout the summer, right? And I had tweeted out about him, watched some film or whatnot. But let me just check in, see what he's doing. This was his first game back. And the first time they got the ball on offense, they took a deep shot to Kyle Sheets, touchdown. Like he had just quickly beat the DB off the line of scrimmage and was gone. So you've factor in someone that's 6'2", 6'3", about 222, can play inside or outside. It doesn't take you long to see, like, this dude can have some success. Kind of like a Ben Skowronek. I know Skowronek is sort of the tight end as opposed to what he was at Notre Dame. But you see what I'm saying. When you think about Puka Nacua, you think about Skowronek, You think about all these guys that kind of fit what the Rams do. If you told me Kyle Sheets was going to the Rams, I said, yeah, that make a ton of sense because he kind of fits what they look for at the position. Could also see him going to Pittsburgh too.
Yeah, Sean McVay is probably on the phone with Sheets' agent saying, hey, look, man, if you don't get drafted, we'll give you whatever you want in the undrafted round. But he won't go undrafted. It sounds like I think he had 17 touchdowns looking at his stats earlier. I mean, he really had a solid year, had four or five, maybe six games over 100 yards. It was one of the I just saw that he went to Slippery Rock. And that's one of those schools I feel like everyone's heard of, but they don't know what level it is. It's Division II. And then they don't know where it is. It's in Pennsylvania. But yeah, Kyle Sheets seems like he could end up being just a diamond in the rough in this draft. All right, Josh, you have one more? You have one more comparison here? Or am I crazy?
I've got one more. And Kyle Sheets is a name that I've heard a few places too. So that's a really good one. I actually haven't watched him yet. So I'm over here taking notes as Emery's talking, doing a little bit of homework for myself. But the last name that I have is Alex Gubner, the defensive tackle from Montana. And if you love Malcolm Roach, the longtime NFL defensive tackle, you'll love Gubner. A guy that's 6'2½", 294 pounds. Does a lot of slanting for the Grizzlies, but he gets upfield quickly. Pad level gets a little bit too high sometimes, but when you see what he did at his pro day here in the past month, he ran a 4.82 in the 40-yard dash, 1.68 10-yard split. So he's getting upfield quickly, impact in the backfield, somebody that made a lot of plays for that Grizzlies. What's really interesting, this is an anecdote I've shared in multiple places. I don't think it necessarily applies to his NFL future, but it's worth saying nonetheless. As a freshman in 2019, he had four interceptions. Yeah, he's a freshman defensive tackle. He was second in the Big Sky with four interceptions. So I don't necessarily know that that translates to the NFL other than knowing if the ball is up in the air, he's somebody that's, you know, a threat to go get it. But one of the more interesting anecdotes that I've uncovered throughout this draft process thus far.
Yeah, and Montana is a good school. I mean, they were the national title game and the FCS this year. I think they lost to South Dakota State. So you play solid competition. We've seen some good players come out of the FCS level. All right, we got our comparisons in. Now we are going to talk about Josh's favorite country, Canada. I have no idea if that's his favorite country. I'm just making stuff up, Josh. Look, you know who does like Canada? That is producer Harry, because he has seen some of Miami. He's a Dolphins fan, and Cameron Wake came from Canada, and he feels like he's indebted to Canada for that. All right. Now, you guys, we've seen guys come from the CFL. We've seen guys come from Canada and have successful careers in the NFL. So, Emery, I will start with you. Is there anyone you could see coming from Canada down to the NFL in 2024?
There's a good bit, and here's the thing. I've gone to the first All-Star game out the gate every year, and that is the U Sports East-West Bowl. The U Sports is the NCAA of Canada. So U Sports is their governing body. They play their All-Star game before the season because it makes sense, because you're not doing anything in November, post-November up there in Canada. So right after, I want to say second week of May, I'm always in Canada because they move it every 2 years to a different spot. Last year, it was in Hamilton. So this year it may be in Hamilton again. So I'll be back up there scouting there. It's set up like a regular All-Star game. We have three or four practices, you know, walk through, then a game on Saturday. So this is the first All-Star game to get the clock started on the upcoming draft. So when I was up there 2 years ago, I saw Theo Benedict of University of British Columbia. Went up there last year. He was up there. Went down to the East-West Shrine Bowl, and he was there. That's what I was like, man. At the College Gridiron Showcase this year, I'm looking at the kid. I'm like, you know, man, this UBC kid is pretty doggone good. Then I was like, I kind of feel like I've seen him before. Then I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. That was last year at the Shrine Bowl. So it's kind of like cheating where, you know, you went through the whole draft process. And Canada is unique in that way. You can go through the whole draft process, go through the preseason, and then decide to go back to school. So he was able to get through a training camp and say, okay, I want to go back to UBC. So he went through the pre-draft process last year. So I wasn't shocked that he was out there dominating college guys this year, because basically was a pro already. But he is awesome, man. He has good footwork, good technique, good core strength. And he was showing last year at the Shrine Bowl and also this season at the Gridiron Showcase that the jump from the U Sports to the NCAA isn't a lot. Because we know up in Canada, they play defensively, they play a yard off the ball. So, you know, you have that gap that you have time to really get adjusted. So when you're playing in the States, things happen a lot quicker because they're right there on the ball. So you got to get used to not only the speed, the explosiveness, the consistency of the athleticism that you see down and down out. And he was able to make that adjustment. Usually you see these Canadian dudes struggle on day one of an all-star game event because they're trying to get acclimated to the different, you know, dimensions of the game. And then as the week goes on, they just get better and better and better. And that's what about, that's what I saw about Benedict and also Patrick Lavoie of Carleton. Now, this is a program that does a good job in developing offensive linemen, as does UBC in Alberta. I'm surprised didn't have one this year. Usually they have a guy that's coming out as well. And Laval, another, that's the Alabama of the U sports up there in Canada. So, but Laval was someone that stood out this year at the U Sports East-West Bowl. I was like, wow, he's got good footwork, good hand usage. He was able to sit down versus a bull rush. And this was someone that was like, okay, then I saw him down at the FCS Bowl, watching him get used to that talent down and down out. He had one of the better weeks, in my opinion.
Now, let me ask you this. When you have guys coming down from Canada, I know you mentioned that it looked like, obviously, there's a little bit of adjustment because of the guys playing 1 yard off the ball. Do you think either of these guys could come in and start for an NFL team right now? Or do you think they're more raw and could kind of work their way toward that?
They can work their way toward that, because where I see the difference between the NCAA and the U Sports and the Canadian athlete and the, you know, athlete here in the States is they start a little bit later in terms of playing football, and the strength and conditioning is different down here than it is up there. They're starting to get up to speed, because I remember when the first U Sports game I went to was in maybe like 2012. And my homeboy had called me, and I was like, he was like, oh, what is it like up there? I said, bro, honestly, I think Ball State will beat the brakes off one of these. Just like, you know what I'm saying? Just a random FBS team. And he was like, I was like, bro, it just feels different. But every year since then, it's just been better and better and better, especially at receiver, especially along the offensive line. There's been a couple of times within the last 6 years the Giants have brought in a U Sports offensive lineman. I remember they brought in Samuel Tomlinson, who was like 6'7", 350, you know, out of Laval. Played well during the camps or whatnot. They went back up to Canada. We've seen Carter O'Donnell, you know, hang on with the Colts. You know, we've seen Mark Cordy come down, play well for the Indianapolis Colts. Now he's starting up there for the Edmonton Elks. So it's gotten better, significantly better, to where you're starting to see now Canadian prospects getting pushed into the NCAA. So they're starting, like a guy that I'll mention here, Michael Chris Ike, running back for Delaware State, was a highly touted recruit in Canada, but Delaware State went up there, grabbed him down, brought him in, and he developed into a fullback for the Hornets. He's 6'2", 225, but at the CFL combine, he ran one of the smoothest 4.52s you ever find. So now you got guys that are getting physically fit up there, getting ready to go, and you're starting to see the college coaches at the NCAA level go up there and pluck out talent, because you see Canadian prospects littered all across the NCAA.
It is crazy to think that we could soon have a Canadian pipeline into American football, because obviously, you know, I think most football fans just associate Canada with the CFL, but, you know, clearly these guys can play, as you just mentioned. All right, Josh, who do you have? Who are your Canadians?
Well, first of all, it's asinine that Emery would talk about an offensive tackle at the University of British Columbia, because what are the odds that an offensive tackle is going to make that transition? Not as good as it would be if two made that transition, because left tackle Giovanni Manu from British Columbia is somebody that the NFL is very aware of as well. He's got a couple of 30 visits, 6'7", 353 pounds. As Emery mentioned, the game is a little bit different there, so there's going to be some technical refinement that has to happen with each of these players. They've gotten a little bit of a jump on it the past couple of years, having gone down to the Shrine Bowl and competed. But Monty ran a 4.96 in the 40-yard dash. He had a 33.5-inch vertical jump. So both really great numbers for an offensive line, especially going north of 350 pounds. But again, it's going to take a little bit of an adjustment to make that transition to the next level. So I think it's more likely that you see those players probably get into a practice squad where they can learn and compete on a daily basis before they're thrust into a really, you know, prime role position. But that's why NFL teams are bringing these guys in for visits, so they can start building a relationship with them and possibly be able to sign them once the draft is over. There's a chance they could get into the draft, but I think a lot of teams are looking at these guys as developmental players that still have their best football ahead of them. Then there's also cornerback Quantes Stiggers. He's got good size. He's 5'11", 196, played for the Toronto Argonauts. He was at the Shrine Bowl as well, so Eric Galco has talked about him quite a bit. This is a guy that has good spatial awareness. He's made plays for that team. I think what's interesting is something that Emery touched on earlier, which is the fact that you're playing a little bit off the line of scrimmage. So these guys are getting a running head start. You've got to be able to make that adjustment at that level. But once you make the transition to the NFL, it's a little bit easier in that regard because the other guy doesn't have a head start. But at the same time, he doesn't really have that exposure to landing jams at the line of scrimmage. So he's going to have to work on that with his press man coverage. But this is a guy that I think is really comfortable in zone coverage, has to work on his tackling technique a little bit, but somebody that NFL teams are monitoring on day three of this draft class, and somebody that I think fans might see come off the board before Saturday is over.
I want to say this too about his, he has a unique background because he didn't play college ball. He was getting ready to go to college, had a family emergency, went to work, played in the fan-controlled football league, went to an Argonauts tryout, and worked out there and got signed. Ended up winning Rookie of the Year this past CFL season. So you're dealing with a big ball of clay in that regard. And you're right about playing. I always tell people this when they ask the difference between defense in the CFL and defense in a league. Like, imagine, because the field is wider, so imagine someone dropping you off in a Walmart parking lot and telling you, hey man, you got from the door to the end of the parking lot. That's how, when you talk about playing zone, man, it's like you're playing in literally space. So you gotta be able to anticipate, you gotta be able to be quick. So it's fascinating to see. That's why I feel like, and this didn't get talked about enough with Kurt Warner, coming from the Arena League to playing in the NFL, because you're playing inside a damn classroom. It's like, okay, I gotta be accurate. The ball has to get out quick. The placement has to be where it needs to be. So when you get a little bit more space, but you're still operating like you're in a classroom, you're gonna be like all on point. So I always am fascinated with the defensive backs that go from playing out in, you know, wide open, you know, prairies to coming in a more confined 53 and a third. You're like, wow, I really can maximize the space I have because I'm used to playing in so much with so much room. I can do a lot better. So it's going to be fascinating to watch his progress, you know, moving forward.
Yeah, and it's crazy.
He grew up in the United States before making that transition, and then COVID happened, so that was kind of thrown into the mix there as well. 5'11", 204, ran a 4.46 in the 40-yard dash, so he's got all the traits that you would possibly need to make that transition. Sorry, Breach.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say it's crazy to think that you have a guy who did not play college football who could end up being successful in the NFL. And I think Emery makes a good point, just that if you're a good defensive back in Canada where the field's bigger, then it's like kicking in. It'd be like if the uprights in college, I had the high school uprights where they're wider, except those were the NFL uprights. You kicked on the skinny ones in college, and then you go to the wider ones where it should be theoretically easier for you. So that's definitely an interesting aspect of this. Do you guys think he gets drafted?
I think so, because he's impressed so much at the Shrine Bowl. Like, every day, everyone was locked into what he was doing in one-on-ones. Now, the flip side is he just came off a 20-game season. So, you know, you think about when he's going to hit that wall if he's not at that point already playing 20 professional football games or 18 professional football games, because he missed a couple. And now to have to go through the rigors of an NFL season, that could probably push his draft stock down. But I do know teams are kind of upset that they can't just sign him right now, that he has to go through this draft process because they wanted to secure his rights right away. So he may go higher than we think.
Josh, where do you think he goes?
I think you're still probably looking at late day three somewhere. So probably that sixth, seventh round range, just because there is somewhat of an unknown with him as far as making that transition. Again, he grew up playing American football. You know, he's had exposure at the Shrine Bowl. So it's not totally new to him the way that we've discussed with a Manu or a Benedet, but somebody that, you know, is definitely going to have to acclimate to the speed of the game a little bit.
All right. We've already talked about small college sleepers. We have talked about Canadian sleepers. After the break, we're going to talk about quarterback sleepers.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
Let's go!
It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount+. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.
All right, we're back talking about sleeper prospects, small school prospects, and now we are going to talk about quarterbacks that fit that mold. We all know about the quarterbacks at the top of the draft, but maybe there's a next Brock Purdy. Maybe there's a Mr. Irrelevant in here who is at the bottom of the draft. Isn't it fun that I feel like for the past 20 years it was always who's going to be the next Tom Brady? And there was no new name, and we always talked about the same late round pick. And now we have Purdy to mention. All right, Emery, I'll start with you. Who is a small school or sleeper QB prospect you have?
Cade Peterson, Grand Valley State. I've been a big fan of his for 2 years now. You know, I was the MC on the GLIAC Media Day. This was in Detroit on the campus of Wayne State. So I met him in person. Definitely off the bus look, kind of is in that Josh McCown mold where he looks the part physically. Then you go watch him play, and he plays with that same defensive mentality as a quarterback, which is awesome. So he's athletic. He can run. He's also someone that's going to never say die. Sometimes to his detriment, you got to let a dead kid die. But he can make all the throws, has a terrific touch on his deep ball. But it's the athleticism where he's going to be able to extend plays, scramble while keeping his eyes downfield. And if push comes to shove, he's going to lower his shoulder and try to run through you for extra yards. So I'm a big fan of what he's done. I mean, you think about we talk about Army, Navy. We talk about Harvard, Yale. We talk about Alabama, Auburn. No one talks about the Anchor Bone Classic between Grand Valley and Ferris State. That is a fantastic rivalry. And a lot of times usually decides who's going to go further in the playoffs. Well, this year they beat Ferris State twice. So that speaks volumes of them overcoming that boogeyman of Ferris State, who won back-to-back Division II national championships. And so to lead his team through that and come out on the other side, I think this is an underrated prospect. Had a really good college rundown showcase as well.
Yeah, and you know what? Grand Valley can produce NFL players. We saw Matthew Judon come out of there a few years ago. Heck, Brian Kelly was the head coach there, 15, 20 years ago. So they're a legit program. And there's no reason someone from Grand Valley cannot thrive in the NFL. All right, Josh, who's your small school quarterback to watch out for?
Yeah, and just to add on that, Ferris State has a defensive back, Sean Stevens, that is going to be appealing for NFL teams as well. My small school quarterback is Sanford's Michael Hyers, a player that did not get invited to the combine, but I think has a lot of qualities that you look for at the next level. We're not talking about top 100 guys here. So we're talking about guys that are going to be drafted later in the process, you know, on Saturday. So how are they going to make a roster? Because when you look at what we saw last year, so many of these backup quarterbacks saw action. You've got to be able to contribute immediately. So what I want to look for when I'm looking for a player that is ready to compete right away, I'm looking for somebody that's comfortable in the pocket. They have a good sense of pressure. They can maneuver in the pocket. They throw with touch, good facilitator, and maybe doesn't have the arm strength that some of these top options have. But to me, that's Hyers all day. He's somebody that can work within the pocket. If he feels pressure off his side, he's going to step up. If he feels it from in front of him, he's going to step to his side. So somebody that has a really good sense of pressure and he knows how to avoid it. When he does get into space, I think he has good enough accuracy to make those throws when the field is cut in half. Not necessarily a dual threat quarterback, but somebody that has enough foot quickness where he can get some yardage for you if the play breaks down. So to me, Hyers is somebody that I think has a lot of value for teams as they're looking to fill out a roster.
Yeah, and look, he's what, a year 2022 Southern Conference Player of the Year. So he's had some huge seasons down there at Samford. Where do you think would be a good fit for him?
I think looking at San Francisco, you know, getting somebody else in that system that isn't going to be asked to start right away. You've got Brock Purdy already. So develop a guy that is going to be able to learn at his own pace in an offense that takes a little bit of that stress off your shoulders. I think that's a situation where San Francisco could find some value in adding a quality depth player without sinking that type of financial capital into the position.
All right, Emery, you got another sleeper quarterback. Who is it?
You know how growing up where, you know, you ask your parents for like McDonald's and they say, we got McDonald's at home and they make you this burger, right? If you're asking for Jayden Daniels and they say, we got Jayden Daniels at home, it's Darren Granger of Georgia State, who is built the same way, very lean, very athletic, has a whip of a release, you know, does a good job in keeping plays alive with his mobility and also can buy time to find someone deep down the field, can also take off and run for 50 plus yards if he wants to. And he was so good at Furman that I thought he would just stay there and really would have, you know, been a draft pick coming out of Furman, but he transfers up to the Sun Best Conference and then goes to Georgia State and plays really well there. And the good part is he's been consistent over time. I thought he came out in the draft last year. Didn't know he had an extra year. He went back and performed really well. So this is someone that's very Jayden Daniels-like coming out of one of the best conferences in college football.
And where would you like to see him end up?
Well, this is before they made the move to go and get two excellent quarterbacks to help fill out their roster and compete for a starting job. But Pittsburgh would have been perfect, because of – what they're looking like, as you see what the moves they've made, the moves that they're trying to make and what they've had bubbling behind the surface a little bit. We saw them with Josh Dobbs. We saw them honestly with, two-time Super Bowl champion from South Dakota State. I can't remember his name now, but he's with the Kansas City Chiefs as the third string quarterback, but he was drafted by Pittsburgh. I thought I had a higher grade on him than Kenny Pickett. So I thought Pittsburgh was on the right track. And then they went and, you know, let him go. He signs with Kansas City for the last two seasons. His name slips my mind. I'll figure it out as watch when we get off air. But, you know, this would be the perfect spot. Pittsburgh would be the perfect spot. Seattle as a backup could be a third QB3 would be the perfect spot, in my opinion, because, again, he has the athleticism, has the ability to work deep down the field and shown in games against P5 competition, against South Carolina, against Auburn, that he's got the goods to play high-level football.
That is – what do you think – if you're a GM, would you – you know, you said he's kind of Jayden Daniels light. Would you take Jayden Daniels in the first round and then turn around and take Granger with like a sixth-round pick or seventh-round pick to kind of – so you have guys with the same skill set at your QB1, QB2?
That's the smart thing to do. You know, because that way you don't change much what you want to do offensively. Just how you may see people do that with receiver, you kind of have to do that with quarterback, because we've seen what in the last 3 years, since COVID. So we've seen you're going to play your backup at some point in time in this season. I don't know what has happened, but we have seen the influx of the backup quarterback over the last 4 years. So, yes, you want to make sure your QB2 and your emergency game day guy you trust, because we've seen what that looks like, for teams going out there on with a backup quarterback that has no idea what to do and is showing you that he can't play. You better make sure you're ready to go. If worst case happens, that you got to use your guy on the field during the game.
All right, Josh, you have one more sleeper quarterback. Who is it?
First of all, we, only had so many topics that we could discuss. So it's kind of tough to fit all these guys into the conversation. But Furman's got an offensive lineman, Jacob Johanning, who's got some positional versatility as well. May not get drafted, but I think he will get some camp looks. My final quarterback to note, in the spirit of where this all began, which was Brock Purdy, having played extensively at the collegiate level with Iowa State, I'm gonna go with Keaton Slovis. He began his career with USC, crisscrossed the country, ended up at BYU. Again, I'm looking at similar qualities to what I discussed with Michael Hyers. Somebody that's comfortable within the pocket, he can throw a touch, he can maneuver when he's pressured. Everything that's going to give you a fighting chance when the play breaks down. I think Keaton Slovis has played enough college football where, again, he's not giving you that high level, you know, potential at the quarterback position. But as you're looking to fill out a depth chart, a roster, a team like New Orleans behind Derek Carr, maybe that's a potential fit there. He's able to go in there, sit and learn behind Derek Carr in that offense. And maybe that's a scenario where he can develop into something more for them down the road.
All right. We are done with quarterbacks. Now we're going to talk about kind of an underrated group, really. And that's the historically black colleges and universities, and kind of take a look at the prospects there. Emory, I will start with you.
Well, this is one of those seasons where there's good talent, but I thought last year there was an influx, right? Maybe because we saw, like, you know, the transfer portal and also guys that were entering their fifth year. So you had a bunch of talent. But this year, I was on a call for the Norfolk State, Virginia State game in the opener. If you guys remember that, that was that wild finish of a college football game where the extra point got blocked and all kind of craziness happened, right? But I remember pregame, I'm on the field talking with the coaches, and I was just blown away at how large Virginia State's offensive line was. And this is a Division II program. They look like an FBS program with the size. Matthew Foster was the tackle that really stood out because he got long arms, active hands. He's 6'5", 310, had a really good HBCU Legacy Bowl, so he was able to work himself really well against, you know, offensive line, defensive pass rush. And to his credit, there weren't a lot of size at the HBCU Legacy Bowl on the defense side of the ball, so he had to really work against shorter, smaller, quicker edge guys, and he was able to hold his own. I just want him to activate his hands a little bit more, be a little bit more urgent in that regard, because you got the length, you got the quickness, you got the ability to lock out and extend. Just get your hands on him quicker. But he's someone that looks the part, definitely plays the part. He was a CIAA Offensive Lineman of the Year back in 2022. And he was someone that held his own against Norfolk State. And I was glad to see him get into that postseason All-Star game at the end.
Well, I think Josh took a page out of Emery's book, because you have one of you have another Virginia State player here, Josh, as a guy to watch out for.
Yeah, I'm actually going to double dip. I'm going to go ahead and go with both of them because I know we got one more topic we want to get to. I'm going to start with Willie Drew, the cornerback from Virginia State. Went to the NFL Combine, measured 6 foot, 191. But more notably, he had 32-inch arms, which is pretty long for a cornerback, especially one that's potentially going to be drafted on day three. Where that helps you at the next level is when you are beaten – suddenly that recovery, the window that the opposing quarterback has, gets a little bit smaller because those long arms are able to get up there and, you know, break up that ball at the catch point. Ran a 4.46 at the NFL Combine. He had a 1.49 10-yard split. So a player, again, that has a lot of potential athletically. Thought he needs a little bit more refinement in terms of his skill is concerned, which I think, as Emory noted, is kind of a similar characteristic of most of these guys. Because the other guy I had was edge rusher Sundiata Anderson, who I know Emory is a big fan of, athletic freak in this class, but somebody you really want to see use his hands a little bit better, deconstruct blocks, develop more pass rush moves so he creates more of a pass rush plan to get after the quarterback. But when you're talking about what he was able to accomplish athletically, he had a 38.5-inch vertical jump and a 10-foot-3 broad jump at 6'5", 240 pounds. So this is a guy that's jumping out of the gym both vertically and broadly and using that to get after the quarterback. So I think when teams are looking for a player with developmental pass rush skills, he's going to be somebody that is at the top of the list as we start getting towards the end of this draft and potentially just trying to fill out the undrafted free agency roster.
All right, Emery, I'm going to come back to you for one more. And then after you give us your last guy, do you think any of the four guys that we just mentioned will get drafted?
It's going to be tough, man, because there's a lot of talent at the top this year at all of these positions. But I look at Mikey Victor of Alabama State. He's 6'2", about 215, 220, physical press corner, had a great week at the Hula Bowl, got the call up to the East-West Shrine Bowl and did well there. Some people may see him as a safety. I see him as a boundary corner because of how physical he is. He's a great open field tackler. I don't think we'll see maybe two HBCU prospects get drafted this season.
All right, we made it through our HBCU guys, and now we're going to close out the show by talking about my favorite topic, physical freaks, because I am not a physical freak. I am the opposite of a physical freak. I would lose a bar fight if I ever gotten one. Look, these are the big, tall, fast guys that the average fan probably hasn't heard of because they're at smaller schools, as has been the theme for this entire show. Josh, give us a physical freak.
I'm actually going to turn the tables here real quick, Breach, because something that I think is interesting that is worth noting as fans start considering how teams are building out their rosters once you get into day three, touch a little bit on the new kickoff rule and potentially the type of personnel that teams could be looking for now. How do the new kickoff rules kind of shape the personnel that teams may want at those positions?
Well, you know, what's funny is that you guys mentioned at the top some of your comparisons. You know, Cole Burgess was a wide receiver you mentioned, Jaden Sheridan, the running back that Emery mentioned, that you do have these small athletic guys that might make better returners. I don't think that anyone knows what the return is going to look like at this point. It's not going to look like a standard kickoff return. Is it going to turn into something where you kind of have a one cut, you want a running back up back there who can do a one cut and go, and you can actually set up a blocking scheme? Or are the coverage guys going to be too athletic for that to happen? Because it's not the exact setup they had in the XFL. The coverage guys are closer to the kicker than they are in the XFL, which is good for the returner. And then we also don't know what the special team strategy is going to be. Is the special teams coordinator going to ask their kicker to try and put the ball on the ground at all costs? Because that gives your coverage team an extra few seconds. I don't think this will have a huge difference on the coverage teams, because what you still want is athletic guys out there who can tackle. That's what you wanted. You know, you're not going to have offensive linemen out there now because the guys are standing still and they don't have to run downfield because that hinders you. We see what happens on a missed field goal. You try a 60-yard field goal, it falls short. You have that returner back there. The reason we see these 109-yard returns is because you have 310-pound offensive linemen trying to make that tackle. So I think the strategy and the chess part here is going to be with the returners and who you want back there. Do you want a Devin Hester? Do you want a receiver? Do you want a running back? And I also think we'll see, you know, in a game like the Super Bowl, we'll see players like Christian McCaffrey back there because it is obviously a huge game, but you want your most talented player with the ball in their hands in situations like that. What do you think, Emery?
No, you added an additional playmaker back there. So you want someone like a running back or someone that's used to returning the football back there because it gives you an added bonus in terms of the third element of the game that people tend to forget about.
Yeah, so it is. And I think that's the other interesting thing is that you have special team coaches who are going to be lobbying to get players in the sixth and seventh round who might be able to help the kickoff team, but they're going into it blind because they have no evidence. There's nothing that they don't know what's going to work. They don't know what's not going to work. So they're just going based on what they saw in the XFL, which, hey, the XFL is good, but the players aren't as athletic as they are in the NFL. The kickers aren't as good. The returners aren't as good. So you really don't have a great idea of what is going to happen. All right, you guys each get one physical freak. And now that Josh is done turning the tables, you get one freak, Josh. You can't name yourself.
Oh, that's too bad, because that's what I was going to use. I think, first of all of that is incredibly important as we consider what teams are going to try to do on day three of the draft, because you only have so many starters. So at this stage of the draft, it's more realistic that teams are looking for depth players. They're looking for those special teams contributors. And what I was getting at there is Bo Richter, the linebacker from Air Force, is just a missile on the football field. I mean, he is a heat-seeking missile wherever you line him up. He's played inside linebacker. He's played outside linebacker. He's been an edge rusher, but somebody that's incredibly savvy. He knows how to use his arms, his hands to deconstruct blocks, get off the edge. He's somebody that is able to accelerate quickly, has good top-end speed, and knows how to make plays in space. So if you're looking for a special teams contributor that's going to be able to help you on those kickoffs, Richter, I think, is a guy that's going to be really appealing to a lot of teams trying to fill out that role, because not only you talk about his athletic gifts, but now coming from Air Force, you kind of understand his discipline, what you can expect of him when he comes out to practice. 6 foot, 248, 40-inch vertical jump, which is absurd, 4.56 40-yard dash with a 1.56 10-yard split. So he's fast. He can jump high. He can build speed quickly. This is the type of guy that you're looking for as a depth position at the linebacker position, but somebody that can also help you on special teams.
Yeah, that's a good point there. And one thing about the kickoff, too, is that maybe when you look at 40-yard dashes, it was how fast can you get downfield, especially on, you know, your gunners for the punt and your kickoff coverage team. But now that's not as big of a deal because you're not going to just be sprinting 40 yards. You're going to be running into blockers 5 yards downfield. And someone like Bo Richter definitely could be a force on special teams. Emery, who do you have as your physical freak?
Antonio Elfano out of Lackawanna College, JUCO program. Now, if the name sounds familiar, he was the number one overall recruit during his high school recruiting class, signed with Alabama, practiced with Alabama, then he left the team. That's the infamous Saban said, well, he just quit, right? Well, he had some things going on in his personal life and finally found his way, ended up at Lackawanna, fast forward a couple of years. But you go watch his tape, it looks like the number one overall recruit playing at Lackawanna Community College. So he is insanely athletic, 6'5", 275. And since we're keeping with the special teams theme, think about punt block. Think about field goal block. Someone that can sky up and make plays, but you're getting a legitimate rock ball of clay. Well, Elfano, who's now mentally where he needs to be, still has those athletic traits. It wouldn't shock me to see him get drafted on day three, maybe as Mr. Irrelevant.
And it took until the final segment for you guys to mention a school I have never heard of. That would be Lackawanna College. Good job, Emery. You win you get the most points. You get the bonus points there. But that is it. That is the end of the show. We'll be back tomorrow. We're going to make some offensive players draft matchmaker. That is where we'll put the right draft prospects on the right team. If you're watching on YouTube, listening, whatever, just remember to like, leave some nice comments, leave a nice review. Tell us how much you love Emery. Tell us how much you love Josh. For Emery Hott, for Josh Edwards, I'm John Breach. We'll see you guys later this week.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Hosts Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.